Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ding dong merrily on Will in heaven, the Will is willing. Ding dong merrily on Laura. Laura is Nas. Welcome to National Treasures, the Christmas one. Because Brighton Market could not entertain us for so long, we do a little Christmas party and you're listening to it now. Welcome, one and
hello.
All. Welcome to your final National Treasures episode of the year.
No,
the plan for this, my friends.
We love it so much.
Yeah, we'll be back next year, don't worry. I mean, we've literally recorded a couple already. But as the final one for the year, we thought we'd do something a little bit special. For our patrons, we do a monthly live stream where Laura and I take it in turns to explain something in history to each other in our usual professional, erudite, concise, knowledgeable way. We've covered things like the Salem witch trials. We've also covered a toilet museum in Korea. Literally fucking anything. So this, what we've done is we thought we'd put out a live stream so that you, the listener, who's not on Patreon, might be slightly enticed to come and join us at patreon.com/national treasures. What we've done is Laura and I have written a few quiz rounds for each other. She, you can't see this, we're on a Zoom, is already distracted by that fucking dog. So we've got Laura and
we've got this reindeer decoration, right, that's got like, you know, like an umbrella has an extendable...
What are we, a minute and a half in?
Shut up. You know, an umbrella has like an extendable thing that puts the umbrella up.
Yeah,
that's
what they say, isn't it? Like, you know that thing that the umbrella's got that puts the umbrella up? You should have been an engineer.
Oh, piss you. Anyway, we've got a reindeer that's got four of those as legs, so you can have like a real tall reindeer or a little squat one. And Maki just hates it. She's so territorial to this reindeer. And anytime she can go and fight it, she gets hold of his scarf and she pulls it over and then she just humps its head. And like, Tom's not here to tell her off, so I had to pick her up. Otherwise, that whole reindeer is going to get destroyed.
Well, Laura, Clay, that's one side of putting on it. But what Laura seems to have forgotten is that last week I went round to Laura's house and she said, hey, look at this. It's really funny. Got the reindeer out, got it all big so that Maki would fight it. And then when we heard Tom, who'd had a terrible day with like flight cancellations, came back, Laura, like a child that had been caught doing something bad, just went, oh, Tom's home, and like shooed the dog off, fixed the reindeer and put it away so that she wouldn't get in trouble. So don't pretend, Laura, for one second that you are the yeoman of the reindeer community.
Listen, I'm fully aware that every behavioral problem my dog has is my own fault because I treat her like a small hairy baby instead of a dog. However, I do not apologize and I won't change. So, oh, well, I've got a terrible dog now. She's furious at the front door right now. I'm so sorry about this.
No,
everyone.
You can't.
I can't what?
Leave me with these people.
I'm just saying there's going to be a backdrop of Jack Russell nightmare anyway. Anyway, in the chat at the live stream right now, there is Hannah says, I audibly cheered when Maki appeared. And Mystic says, we love that fucking dog. So say for Mackie, the third presenter of the show, you wish your hamster was as full of personality.
Did I tell you when we thought my hamster was dying the other day?
Oh, no. Why?
So there was a cold snap last week in the UK and it was really, really cold. Like, obviously, it's winter, so it's going to be cold. But I just heard Becca laugh from the other room because she knows the story. So Becca sent me a text. I was out at a gig or something. She's like, I'm really worried about the hamster because... And so I had a hamster. They're often quite docile for a few seconds, but then they're like, fuck, and they go crazy. And this hamster in particular, she's like, she likes to climb, she likes to play. But we got her out and it was so cold.
She's like the Lara Croft of hamsters.
Yeah, she's like the Lara Croft of hamsters, actually, to be fair. Massive tits as well. So
they're triangular.
And because a hamster, she's a Syrian hamster, obviously Syria is a much warmer climate than Brighton in the UK. And they can get affected by the cold. So I got home and I was like, maybe she'll be fine. And she was just like this still little thing. And we had a hamster previously who had done that and then basically never woke up. Next morning, I go out to live my life. And Becca texts me and she's clearly gleeful because she'd gone to see the hamster, make sure she was still alive, given her a little stroke. And what the hamster had done is the second she'd had the contact had... And we were going to lose our family-friendly rating here, had spread her back legs, popped her tail up in the air, and began to smell very distinctly like the crisp Frazzles. I don't know if you have Frazzles in the US. They are a smoky bacon-flavoured maize snack. They're very tasty, but they smell the exact same as a hamster that's begging to get banged. She wasn't dying. She was in heat.
Oh, well, that's a happy ending. Well done, Frazzlepuss.
And now she's absolutely fine.
But still horny, unless you sorted her out.
Well, the cycle of a hamster is like sort of fortnightly. So she's not horny now, but she will be sort of around the 29th. And you have to like sort of stroke their back haunches, like her legs. So she thinks that something good's going to happen. But you can't finger them. Neither, to be fair, do I want to.
Quick disclaimer then, when you remembered this was being recorded. That, by the way, is a record for how many people watching the live stream put their hands to their faces while you were talking, Will. That was quite impressive.
Should we start the quiz?
Yeah. Yes, please. What a festive edition this is. So last week we visited Brighton Christmas Market. Hey, we're not going to lie to you about it, listeners. There was not enough there to spin into 2 hours of content. So we are now back in the cozy warm having a little festive quiz. Will, I'm going to quiz you first. I've got you 5 questions in this first round. They're all Christmas related. And this time they're history Christmas.
Okay.
Christmas. I feel is very Treasures Pod related. Question number 1 for you, William. Which King of England was crowned on Christmas Day?
King Stephen.
No, I'm sorry, it wasn't.
Well, fair enough. King William.
Which William?
The fourth.
No.
First. William the First.
William the Conqueror. Correct.
I did know William. That at Westminster Sodding Abbey.
Yes, it was William the Conqueror. He was crowned. So after the Battle of Hastings, it was all up in the air, like, well, you've killed the king. Quick, we've got to make you a king. And they were just trying to like settle everything back down after all of that. So they hastily crowned him very quickly. Yes, at Westminster Abbey in 1066.
That's a really good question that I fucked up.
Well, try and think before you answer. That's what Ron always says to me on Lex Education. He says, don't just say stuff. Okay, question number 2, a little bit more recent history. Which English monarch first delivered a Christmas broadcast?
Is that on television?
It wouldn't have been at that point. No,
because I know the first English monarch to do on television was George the VI, because it's in the King's Speech, the film. So maybe it was his radio. So radio was invented.
His dad was not called radio. It wasn't radio was invented. I'm afraid.
Shut up. I'm doing my working, please. radio was invented while Queen Victoria was on the phone. Throne.
On the phone?
On the throne. And then after she
Hello?
Died.
Who's this? Sorry.
And then it was
the line
Edward.
Is terrible.
So
radio has been
shut
invented.
Shut up, please. So it was either Victoria Edward the Seventh, George the Fifth, Edward the Eighth, or George the Sixth. It's not
well,
George the
Sixth. Narrowed it down to only one third of all monarchs England's ever
there
had.
There are fucking loads. William, Henry, Stephen, Henry, Richard, John, Henry, Edward, Richard, three more Henrys. Anyway, Hannah's not in because she watches horrible histories. so I'm going to go with, it's either Edward the Seventh or George the Fifth. I'm going to go with George the Fifth.
Yes. Well done. It was George the Fifth. And because you got that right, I've got a bonus question for you now, which I don't expect you to get right, but this, I didn't know this. Bonus question, who scripted the first Christmas broadcast?
It was Winston Churchill.
No, it wasn't.
Imagine though.
A bit early, wouldn't it? No, I suppose not.
He was the first Lord of the Admiralty. Come on.
Somebody a bit more into writing than Churchill.
William Shakespeare?
Little bit dead by the time they were doing this. Radio would have really blown his mind.
Roald Dahl?
No. Think about what if this script was called How the King Got His Crown. Oh no, that's one of my clues. That's not good. Tom always says my clues are either.
That's a really terrible clue.
No, it isn't.
Rudyard Kipling.
Yes, it was a clue, you see, because you got it. Thank you, Lisa, for saying good clue in the chat. Thank you. Yeah, Rudyard Kipling wrote the first Christmas Monarch broadcast.
Fair enough. I said something nice about.
Are you not even going to pretend that that's interesting? That's interesting.
I've got more Rudyard Kipling coolness for you to add on.
Oh, well, I'm going to go, fair enough, at the end of it.
Rudyard Kipling was massively into war. Who cares? Until the First World War, when his son got killed, because he only cared when it started to affect him.
Me?
If.
Oh, yeah, that sad poem. I hate poetry so much.
Honestly, I'll tell you a good poem.
You won't?
Okay.
You can tell me a poem. It won't be a good one.
There was a young lady from Staines.
That's a limerick, isn't it?
It's a form of poetry. Next question, please. I've got things to do.
Well, no, I've got a fucking flavour text for you. Can you just be a bit more festive and nice? This is our Christmas party. I really wish there were other employees in our Christmas world. Anyway, so the idea for a Christmas message first was put out there by the BBC. It was their idea to do it. So John Reith, in 1922, went to King George V and said, how about doing a little broadcast now that we've invented radio? And the king was like, no, don't be stupid. The radio is just for people farting about making entertainment programmes. We don't want the royalty to be wrapped up in that. But then 10 years later, he came back to him and was like, I really think it'd be a good idea. And
They should have had him on the board when the royals were approached to do It's a Royal Knockout.
So they came back 10 years later and said, go on, do have a go. And Queen Mary was like, I really think you should. And so they did it on what was then called the Empire Service. It's now called the World Service. And the Prime Minister was like, yes, you should definitely do it. And they were like, whoa, I'm a bit nervous. But then Rudyard Kipling said, I'll write it for you. And so they broadcast it from Sandringham House.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Somebody in the chat, she wants to know the end of the limerick that starts, there was a young lady from Staines. So I'll tell it to you now. There was a young lady from Staines who had some scans of her brains. She learned WebVR, put her brains in a jar, and so could see the result of her pains. There you go.
Oh, it wasn't even rude.
Fine.
Do a rude one now.
There was a young fellow named Hunt.
Uh-oh. Well, that escalated quickly.
Who loved to kiss girls on the 4th of July.
Okay.
She said, right, show me the trick you can do with your three cups and balls, that good old fellow from Hunt.
Well, that was indecipherable. Thank you, William.
Close though, wasn't it?
Your question three of your Christmas history round. Do you know the first line of the poem entitled An Account of a Visit from St. Nicholas?
It was the night before Christmas and all through the house.
Yes, Will. Well done. Did you know that that was what it was called?
Yeah, because you've got a question on that in a bit. We didn't talk before we did the questions.
Did? I told you I was doing history, but I guess this is more literature than history.
Yeah, the issue is you used to do history and then didn't. Do you want a geography question?
No, I don't. I want to finish doing my questions. What colour is Santa's? Showing up in front of your friends. There is absolutely no coming back from someone telling you to stop showing off in front of your friends.
I'll tell you what.
It's the most leg-swipey thing you can say to someone.
There's a worse one, which is, who are you showing off for?
Oh, yeah. Oh, nothing deflates the fun in your heart quicker than somebody doing that. Ugh.
Who are you showing off for?
So, yeah, a visit from St. Nicholas was more commonly known, it is more commonly known as the night before Christmas, twas the night before Christmas. It was first published anonymously, in 1823. Circa history, and later on Clement Clark Moore claimed authorship of it in 1837.
That's like when you get a terror attack, isn't it? Like the IRA have claimed this poem.
Yeah, and the devastating effects that it's had. Okay, question four. No, we'll do question five first because it's a super easy one.
That will have become question four.
Yeah, now it's question four. In 1931, Santa Claus got a big advertising job with which company, after which he remained almost exclusively in his red coat?
Holidays are coming, holidays are coming. Da-na-na-na-na, Nicaraguan death squads. Da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na, Coca-Cola.
Correct. I included this question mainly for the flavor text because I was interested in this, because it's a common like misfact where people say, oh, did you know Santa Claus had a green coat until the Coca-Cola Corporation changed it to red, blah, blah, blah. That's not strictly true. Prior to being the Coca-Cola spokesperson, Santa Claus sometimes had a red coat, sometimes had a green coat, sometimes had all sorts of colors. But then after Coca-Cola, just switched to red almost permanently. So that's the origin of that sort of half fact there, which I thought was fun.
That's really good, actually, yeah. I knew that they hadn't changed it, but I didn't know that it was sort of because of them that he was primarily seen as red. So that's a really good thing for me to learn at my Christmas party.
Yeah, now do a shot. Okay, and your final question in the history section, which English king is credited with, I don't know why my mouth stopped working for half this, which, blah, blah, blah. Do you know what? I was half thinking of having a glass of wine while we did this. And then I thought, don't, because you've still got book club after this. And then you've got to edit this. You'll be an absolute mess by the time you get to book club, just sobbing about Meghan Markle. So I didn't, but maybe I'll be able to talk better if I could. So
what?
William, what? Five. I've been recording nonstop since 4 o'clock. My brain is fried. Which famous English king is credited with associating turkeys with Christmas dinner?
Well, it's got to be after Henry VIII, because I'm going to say George III.
I'm sorry, Will. It was Henry VIII himself.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's documentation of turkeys first being imported into the UK in the early 16th century, because obviously this is a time of big exploration for British people. We're discovering other countries and turning up and seeing what's there. And Henry VIII was apparently the first British monarch to enjoy turkey on Christmas Day. But then it did take another 400 years for the turkey to go from being a very speciality luxury item to the most popular Christmas Day dinner.
Would you like to hear a fact about Christmas dinner that I learned and nearly did a question for you about, but didn't? So I can just tell you. Before turkeys were brought over to the UK, the upper classes would eat which bird that after they had plucked it and cooked it, they would redress it in its own feathers before they ate it. Which bird was that?
I reckon a peacock.
It was a peacock.
Yeah. Do you want to do the Harriet Diet story just for old time's sake?
No. And if you don't get that joke, listen back to our oeuvre.
Yeah, that's like that features in nearly every single visit we did in series 1, 2, and 3. There's a bonus fact in the chat. There is no portrait of Henry VIII holding a turkey leg. good fact.
I do believe that was, did we discuss the Mandela effect on here?
We did, but I don't think that came up.
Yeah, because it's the, because the Mandela effect is that he's holding the turkey leg, but he's not and never was.
Boop, boop, whoop. Okay, Will, over to you to quiz me.
All right, I've done your first round, Laura, on Christmas science, because I know how much you love science, Laura.
Science. I hate Uncle Jamie.
I hate Uncle Jamie. Right. Question one, Laura.
Yeah.
If Santa gave every child on Earth one present, his sleigh would weigh roughly 925,000 tons. How many reindeer would you need to pull a sleigh weighing 925,000 tons?
God.
Is it A, 2,000 reindeer, B, 10,000 reindeer, C, 5.6 million reindeer, or D,
this is some bullshit,
9.5 million reindeer? And it is a question about force per square inch. It's about newtons per meter, so it's very much science.
This is some bollocks is what it is. So, I'm asking you about Henry VIII and George V and you're like, calculate the weight of a reindeer and a present.
Laura, 2,000, 10,000, 5.6 million.
I didn't listen to the question because I was outraged.
How many reindeer would it take?
How many children are there?
Don't know, but one present each would be 925,000 tons.
Oh, the middle one. There you go.
Which one? Where's four?
First, middle, second eldest, like me.
What do you A, B, C, or D? Stop fucking over the four.
Yeah.
Sorry?
Why can't you just ask the fuck question?
2,000, 10,000, 5.6 million, or 9.6 million?
2,000.
That's not any middle. That's the lowest.
Well, I said B.
10,000, wrong. It would take C, 5.6 million reindeer to pull a sleigh of 925,000 tons. Interestingly, Laura, if you're going
fast
to...
Fast and loose with the word interesting there.
So, if you're going to include caribou as reindeer, which really you shouldn't because they're caribou.
Caribou? What Christmas film's that from?
Don't know. If you don't include caribou, there are only 4 million reindeer in the world. So there aren't even enough to pull the sleigh. If you include caribou, there are 7.5 million. So they could do it. And about 2.3 million could have it off. Question two. You and I, Laura, call them snowflakes. But what do scientists call them? Is it A, ice hexagons? B, the woke brigade? Little joke there, it's not B, guys. I thought I'd whack in for this comedy podcast because we got to get the fucking podcast awards. How dare they? C, snow crystals, or D, fractal water. That's A, ice hexagons. B, the woke brigade. C, snow crystals, or D, fractal water.
I like this question, Will. I don't think it's ice hexagons. I just feel like that's not scientific enough. The woke brigade, I believe that most scientists are a little bit too intellectual and progressive for that kind of churlish behaviour. I can't remember what the third one was. So
snow
probably
crystals.
Not snow crystals. Snow crystal is nice, but crystals feels a bit new agey, doesn't it, for science? And the word fractals shows up in Frozen. Frozen fractals all around. So I want to go with that one because that's a great song. Fractals, please.
It's snow crystals. I put fractal water as an option because of the song in Frozen.
Oh, we're so similar. Well, yeah, snow crystals, like snow crystals. There's snow crystals, I know.
Good question, isn't it?
So, By the way, caribou comes from the Polar Express. Nobody answered in the chat, and I'm disappointed in all of you for that behaviour.
Yeah,
bad. Work harder.
Though Matt did make a good point. Matt Morrick made an excellent point. Because, of course, it would take that many reindeer, but we haven't bought into the fact that Santa's sleigh is magic. Right, question three, Laura, on Christmas science.
Did you add that disclaimer in case children listen to our podcast? Because we swear every 20 seconds.
There's a child on the live stream.
Yeah, but that's only a small one. That's too small. Doesn't even know what words mean yet.
Okay, question three. Particularly in the UK, I'm not sure about other countries, before you eat your Christmas dinner, you sit down and you pull a Christmas cracker. It reveals a lovely...
I certainly do. Hello, Tom, you sexy bastard.
You're wanking off Tom before Christmas dinner.
No, a pull. If you pull someone, that's a kiss, isn't it?
What did you pull last night? Yeah, snugged her in the club.
Yeah, she wanked me off at her nan's house before Christmas dinner.
Pull someone, don't mean wanking them off, Will.
There's a child on here, Laura. So, anyway... so when you pull it and there's a lovely little smell of explosion and a nice noise. But what three chemicals are used in Christmas crackers to attain that effect? Is it A, potassium nitrate, charcoal and sulfur? Is it B, potassium nitrate, baking powder and sulfur? Is it C, potassium nitrate, charcoal and chalk? Or is it D, potassium nitrate, cream of tartar and sulfur?
Will.
Laura.
I'd love to give you some egghead style explaining of my thought process here, but I've got nothing because those were just some random words that
I will
do not
say,
mean anything to me.
I want you to do well, Laura. I do think that the ones that include baking powder or cream of tartar probably aren't, because one's something you dip scampi in and one's something you use to make scones. So once you eradicate them, you're left with potassium nitrate, charcoal and sulfur, or potassium nitrate, charcoal and chalk. And you know what sulfur smells like because you went to school, and that's the smell you get from a cracker. So if I were you, I'd probably go with that one. And I wouldn't let my own ignorance get in the way of a good question at a quiz. I don't know which one, she says, when one of the options has cream of fucking tartar in it.
You know what, mate? What I'm learning from this Christmas party is that it's such a good job you are self-employed and no one else has to put up with this shit.
Well,
if you were
jobs.
In an office, you'd be even more disgruntled than you currently are, sitting there ruining everybody's fun. I think it's A, William, the sulfur one. And I already actually knew that before you were a patronising sod about it.
And speaking of working in places, I was working in the cafe at the minute. Becca came in for a coffee and all the girls in the cafe
were
like...
Did she pretend not to know you?
No, all the girls in the cafe were like, God, isn't Will just great to have around? Isn't he just such a light, airy guy? And Becca went, what, this fucking guy? I'm just nice when I need to be.
Well, you need to be now. You're literally performing.
Yeah, but look, people are laughing.
Yeah.
Someone's left, I'll give you that. But... oh, my mum's Christmas present has fallen again. Anyway, question four. From looking at the shape of the poop, you can tell the gender of a turkey. True or false?
True.
Correct.
That's a great fact. That makes up for everything else you've done on this episode.
Yeah. Now, I'd love to go into a bit more deep with you, but there's nothing more interesting than lady reindeers look like that when they poo, male reindeers look like that. Bang, end.
I thought you just said turkeys.
Oh, yeah, I meant turkeys, yeah. It is turkeys, yeah.
Do they not have, like, wet poops like other birds, then? Do they not have cloacas where all the water and stuff comes out?
You have now asked beyond my knowledge.
Says, isn't reindeer poo square? I think that's wombats. And yes, jumps in to agree, believe that is wombats. Wouldn't a bird just be producing just, like, a squat mess, though? I don't understand how it's a different shape.
No, maybe it is reindeers.
Oh, jeez.
Do you know what? I'll amend the question. You can tell the gender of either a rainbow or a reindeer.
A rainbow? Gendered rainbows. This sounds like somebody's making a headline generator designed to upset right wingers. We're having a rainbow gender reveal party. We've got 19 turkeys.
I've just got a text from a friend of mine who's at the All Killer No Filler live show today, and apparently Rachel was talking about how much my mum loves the F1. I can't think in what context that would come up. She's gone off the F1 now, my mum. Oh, she's gone off.
She doesn't like it. Well, after all that Ferrari espionage.
What? Genuinely, she's like, they're just cheating with money. My mum's loved the F1 since like 1966. She watches it every week. She loves it. I've been saving up to take it to Silverstone for the Grand Prix. And every day she was like, I'm not watching it anymore. I'm boycotting it. Anyway, question five in your science quiz.
I feel like we've done about 10 questions.
If Santa were to visit every house on Earth in one night, and he weren't magic before you pop in, how fast would he need to travel? Is it A, 1,367 miles a second, 10,024 miles an hour, 50,001 miles an hour
midway through,
or 16,794 miles a second?
Oh, the fourth one, the fastest one.
No, it's the first one, 1,367 miles a second. But of course, it's magic, so it's fine.
I hated your science questions mostly, Will.
You like the poo one?
I did like the poo one, but poo isn't science. Poo is fun.
Right. Round two from you.
Round two from me, Will. Are you ready for some Christmas geography?
Geography is a real blind spot in my general knowledge, so it's going to be a tough listen for everyone.
It's loosely geography in the same way it was loosely history. This one, I loved this question. In which country do people eat KFC for Christmas?
Japan.
Yes, Will. Well done. And I had a look into this because I was like, that's exciting. Where does that come from? It was literally just an ad campaign that really took off. How incredible is that?
Yeah, fantastic. I love it. So, I think it's really great.
This information is from the BBC website here. So according to a KFC Japan spokeswoman, Motoshi Nakatani, it started thanks to Takeshi Okawara, who was the manager of the first KFC in Japan. It opened in around 1970, and Okawara, I mean, it says here, woke up at midnight and jotted down an idea that came to him in a dream.
What, chicken?
Get fucked with that. But
sell
basically,
chicken.
Sell more chicken. Keep my job. Yay, capitalism. He had an idea for a party barrel to be sold at Christmas. So he'd heard a couple of foreigners who were in KFC talking about how they missed having turkey for Christmas. And then he sort of thought like, oh, I wonder if we started doing Christmas associated specials around Christmas time, it would work as a substitute for Westerners or Christians who missed a sort of big turkey dinner to have something along those lines, a poultry substitute for their Christmas dinner. And that's poultry, P-O-U-L-T-R-Y, not poultry, because there's nothing poultry about KFC. Their vegan burgers are really getting me through being a vegetarian and wanting to eat chicken as much as I regularly do. Anyway, so he sort of started marketing this party barrel ready for Christmas. And then in 1974, KFC were like, well, this is going well at his store, so we're going to make it national. They gave it a name which translates to Kentucky for Christmas. And it just went mad. Like, everybody was like, yeah, brilliant idea. There wasn't really a tradition of what to do at Christmas in Japan, and KFC were like, do you want chicken? And people went, yeah, great.
Yeah, I love it. Great.
So they have advertising, they show Japanese families sort of crowding around a bucket of fried chicken. And they've like made it into like, they sell cake and wine as well. It's not just like a bucket of thighs. They've really gone big for it. And they range from like small packages to big packages. And according to KFC, the packages account for about a third of the chain's yearly sales in Japan.
Well, Merry Bloody Christmas. Domo arigato.
Okay, so that was question one. Well done, Will. Your next question. The poinsettia is a traditional Christmas flower, but from where does it originate?
It's Italian, isn't it?
It's not, I'm afraid. No, it is Mexican.
The Mexican, is it? Wow.
Yeah. It's a native plant to Mexico, and in Spanish, the plant is called Flor de la Noche Buena, Flower of the Holy Night, due to its resemblance to the Star of Bethlehem.
That's a really good fact. I used to work at a restaurant that had a cocktail called a poinsettia, and it was rancid.
Oh. I drank a lot of cocktails last night. But they were all like fancy champagne cocktails, so not even a twinge of hangover this morning. I'm like, the rich, they just live differently, don't they? Lovely. Okay, third question, William. Down my way in the West Country, we have a Christmas tradition which is a little similar to going round caroling, but it's a bit drunker and sometimes involves visiting orchards. What's it called?
Festive scrumping.
No, but that's a good shout. Oh, shaking her head. No. Well, shout your answers now, listeners. The answer is Wassailing.
Oh, here we go.
Wassailing. Yes, wassailing is the practice of people going door to door, singing and offering a drink from the wassail bowl in exchange for gifts. But caroling sort of largely took over. But there's two different types of wassailing. This is important, Will. So there's that kind of wassailing where you go door to door and you have the bucket of wassail juice. Or there's orchard visiting wassailing, which is an ancient custom of visiting orchards in the cider producing region. So this sort of goes right up to Gloucestershire, all that kind of more into the Cotswoldsy West Country area. And you would recite incantations and sing to the trees to promote a good harvest for the coming year.
That's wicked. Have you ever heard of Marie Lord?
No.
Marie Lord. M-A-R-I, new word, L-W-Y-D. It's a Welsh wassail thing where you get a horse skull and then put like a cloak on it and you go round to people's houses and then you have to like, you knock on the door and you've sort of like got a... like you've got to sing songs to it so he can't come in. So the horse like, can I come in and drink all your beer? And you'd be like, no, because I've got the friends round. Oh, what after they've gone? No, I've got to do this. And basically you've got to, if you run out of reasons to go in, the horse loses. And if you run out of reasons to keep him out, the horse wins. You've got to give him a beer.
Oh, that's mad. Sophie in the chat says, the Druids on Anglesey still do it. Fun.
Yeah,
I love stuff like that. I love different mythology. We used to have a book. You know, I made you listen to some of it. Do you remember we listened to the Boggart?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In that, they have the myth of the Cailleach Mhuire, who's like a sort of seasonal witch and a frost witch who comes to the door and you have to hang ivy around the windows to keep them away.
Really good.
I love it where you can see the beginnings of our current traditions, like caroling. You're like, oh, that came from going around and singing to the trees to hope that you got good apples next year. It's fun. Okay, your next question. I know we have a few Canadian listeners. What is Santa's postcode in Canada?
Is it like H0H0H0?
That's exactly what it is, Will. Well done. Good. Smashing. Yes. So that's a postcode you can send stuff to in Canada and it will reach Santa Claus. Okay. And your final question, Will, sort of links to one of your science questions for me. In which city were Christmas crackers invented?
Krakow.
Oh, it's a good comedy answer. It's not the right trivia answer, but it was a good comedy answer. It's an English city.
Leeds.
I'm sorry, it's not. It is London.
Oh, fuck it, London.
Would you like a brief history of Christmas crackers, Will?
No, thank you.
Oh, all right then. Cool, you're round.
Yes, please.
So Christmas crackers, they date back to the Victorian times. In early 1850s, there was a confectioner in London called Tom Smith. And he had these sugared almond bonbons and he wrapped them and sold them in a little twisted paper package. And he started adding mottos to the little paper packaging. And because a lot of the times they were given as a like little courting gift, like, oh, I fancy this lady, I'll buy her a little Tom Smith bonbon. Ooh. So a little bit like love hearts, they started putting little love messages on them. And then he was inspired to add the little book bang noise because he put a log on the fire and was like, oh, that crackle is so nice and festive. So he decided to make a little log shaped package that would produce a little bang, and inside would be an almond and a little motto. And soon the sugared almond sort of got switched out for a small gift. And it was originally sold as the Cossack, C-O-S-A-Q-U-E. But the public just started calling them crackers because we're simple idiots. And it went crack. I will call it a cracker. And the paper hat got added in the early 1900s by his sons who took over the manufacturing. And by the 1930s, the love poems had been replaced by jokes or limericks. It became a festive tradition.
That's really good.
I think that information comes from Wikipedia, but I'm not sure.
I thought that the paper hats were added because they were crowns, aren't they? Everyone is a king on Christmas Day was like the...
Yeah, that might be it. Yeah. I don't know why they chose that for advertising, but yeah, they were a later addition to the cracker.
Hannah has put in the chat that she loves this fact. And I say, Hannah, I'm with you. That's a great fact. One of the best bits of content we've done in the last 4 years, Laura.
Yay. I can't believe it's been 4 years. God.
Would you like a Christmas art and literature quiz round?
Yes, please. And I have higher hopes for myself on this one than on the science.
Okay. Very simply, one of the most famous Christmas stories ever told, other than, you know, Jesus, is A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. But... yes. So within 5 years, what year was it released?
Oh, why is it fuzz? That's nothing to do with literature.
Yeah, A Christmas Carol, the book.
Yeah, well, ask me something about the book. All then, right, not what's just the first numbers. Line? 'Twas a quiet day in Scroogeville, and all through the house, not a cratchit was stirring, not even Tim Mouse.
No, Marley was dead to begin with. Good line. Now, the question
Will
is.
Was dead. Hopefully forever.
Do you want to guess at the
Love
year?
From Laura. That's
within 5 years, do you want to guess?
Can you tell me the century? 18s?
Yeah, 18s.
Okay. 1865.
1843.
Oh, a bit earlier than I thought. That's sad.
Which?
I'm really bad at when things happen. That you could have said 1917. I mean, like, oh, okay, yeah.
Are you even slightly impressed that I just knew the first line of Christmas Carol off?
No, because it's a sort of wanky thing that you know, like reciting all the kings just off your head. It's like, oh, Lord, you had some weird ideas about what would make women sleep with you, and you've just remembered all of
but
them.
But I also had some spot on ideas about what made women sleep with me. What's the first line of, I don't know, Catch 22?
Hella was dead to start with, to paraphrase Dickens, but then he woke up and wrote this book, and nobody's read it, but everybody sort of knows what a Catch-22 is.
It was Love at First Sight.
Brilliant. Look at you again. You can't help yourself just showing off that you've got
Laura,
while
you were pissed around, I got a copy of Catch-22
like
and opened it up to page
all
one.
All over again, this, talking to you.
I literally opened up my
favorite
copy
book,
of Catch-22.
Probably Of Mice of Men. I've got to go now because I've actually got rowing practice in the morning, but maybe I could take your number.
I'd have said Of Mice and Men, but whatever. Question two. Which Christmas ballet features the dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy?
Oh, William, that is the Nutcracker.
That is the Nutcracker.
Yes.
Bye. For a bonus point.
Shakespeare?
Tchaikovsky.
Tchaikovsky.
Now, earlier in one of your rounds, you mentioned a little poem, which is most commonly known as 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. The first little bit of which begins, 'Twas the night before Christmas, when all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. But what's next?
The children all snug as a bug in their rugs?
No, the children, I'm afraid you jumped ahead. There's something before.
Oh, okay, hang on. So not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The...
dead air is a crime?
There isn't dead air. You can hear me saying... the frosticles snuggled all right by the door? Give me a clue. Who's doing what? Just tell me who it is and I'll tell you what they're doing.
It's an inanimate object. Something
The stockings all hung by the fire with regret or something like that.
The stockings were hung by the chimney
with hopes of St. Nicholas. Soon would be there.
You can
the
have
children
it.
All snuggled up.
No, that's it. Finished.
Yeah. Okay. Yay.
You can have it eventually.
Thank you, Will, for being lenient.
The thing is, if I'm writing a poem all about Christmas, I definitely include the line, the stockings were hung by the fire with regret.
I can't remember what the words were, but I knew the rhythm. That's hard.
How's regret your emotion you're going to? The stockings were hung by their necks until dead. Question four.
Yeah.
Particularly in the UK, The Snowman is one of the most beloved Christmas books and television shows, but who wrote it?
Oh, Raymond Briggs.
Raymond Briggs. We learned about him the other day. Why, Laura?
Did we?
Yeah, because where we
What's
are going...
What's happened to my short-term memory?
Where we're going for our January episode, he lived nearby.
Oh, did he live in Lewes?
Well, yeah, but and because the countryside and the...
I thought that was Thomas Paine.
More than one person lives in Lewes.
Well, I think as I my friend Janina
lives in Lewis.
In that episode, there are basically two of them.
Okay, so and finally, Laura, going back to the poem, "'Twas a Night Before Christmas."
Yeah,
what a dog. Please so name
just for people that aren't at the live stream but listening later. Hannah's dog has just arrived. Hello, Hannah's dog.
Please name Rudolph doesn't count. Please name the eight reindeer:
Dasher, Dancer, Prancer, Vixen, Donner, Cupid. Fucking Blitzen. Oh, hang on.
Missing one. You do need all eight for the point.
Shut up. On Dasher, on Dancer, on Comet, and Cupid, on Dancer and Prancer.
There's one you've missed.
Donner and Blitzen.
You've missed one. I'll give you one more attempt.
Dasher, Dancer. Dasher, Dancer. Oh, no. I swear I had more of them the first time I did it. Now I'm on the third time. I'm coming over. Dasher, Dancer, Comet, Vixen, Cupid, Prancer, Dancer, Vixen.
No.
I said Dancer twice.
Yeah. You've said
Dasher,
them all.
Dancer.
You've said them all now, but not.
Oh, there we go then.
Guess.
I said them all.
Played the same guess.
I've said them all, but I have said them all.
On Dasher, so on Dancer, on Prancer, on Vixen, on Comet.
On Comet, on Cupid, on Donner, and Blitzen. I said them all.
Yeah, but the first time you went on Dasher, on Dancer, on Donner, on Vixen, on Cupid, on Blitzen, and missed Comet. The second time you missed Prancer and Vixen out, and then you got Donner and Comet around, but you've got them all. You get the point.
Yay!
And now, for non-Patreon listeners, that is the end of your Christmas quiz live stream. We genuinely would love it if you would join. We completely understand that not everyone has the ability to, and that's absolutely fine. The main favorite podcast will remain free forever. If you
forever
do have.
And ever, it's free in your ears. You know that we love you forever. And
if you do have £5 a month to give to the continued production of the National Treasures podcast, then please do head to patreon.com/National Treasures, where you will get extended versions of every episode, plus a weekly Years and Years deep dive into a year by Laura or I, and this monthly live stream. Woo-hoo. Other than that, we hope you have had a lovely Christmas, and we'll see you in the new year.
Yes, for bye. Our trip to Lewis Castle. Bye. We love you. Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.